Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is produced in part by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 239 of the podcast with J.J. Austrian, author of Worm Loves Worm, and Mike Curato, illustrator of Worm Loves Worm. There's not a whole lot I can say about Worm Loves Worm that you won't feel for yourself immediately upon first read. The care and gentleness J.J. and Mike instill in each word and in each illustration yields a story that sticks. It's one of those because stories, where the characters do what they do because that's who they are. No arguments, no disputes, just unabashed love. We're featuring Worm Loves Worm this month at All the Wonders, and have lots and lots of cool behind-the-scenes content for you to check out that may make you love Worm Loves Worm's creators even more deeply than the story itself, which is really saying something. Let's be merry. Here's episode number 239 of the podcast with J.J. Austrian and Mike Curato. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, J.J. and Mike. I am excited that you're here to talk about Worm Loves Worm.
Hey, Matthew.
Hi, Mike. Hey, J.J. Guys, congratulations. You have a book out together. It's wonderful. And J.J., this is your debut picture book, correct?
Yes. Yes, it is. This is my very first book.
And Mike, this is your debut worm picture book. Is that right?
It is my very first worm picture book, yes. But it is my first book that I've illustrated for someone else.
Oh, that counts. That's right.
Yeah. That's been published anyway.
It's been published. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very cool. Hooray for firsts. This is a good first, by the way. This is actually, I would argue, because of its content, a great first for a lot of kids reading too. I love and adore your book. And if there is ever an opportunity for me to wave the Worm Loves Worm banner on social media, I'm always carrying it around and digging that. But I think I should probably step back and give you the floor, JJ, so that you can have an opportunity just to tell the listening audience what Worm Loves Worm is. How are you book talking this book?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm still trying to figure that out. I've only done one real school visit so far. You know, I'm so new at this. I'm trying to figure it out. But I usually just say, you know, it's a picture book about two worms who just want to get married, and all the other insects start trying to plan the wedding for them, just like adults do for other adults. Leave it there. And I just let people read it. I mean, the most fun thing for me was at the school visit I did. I held up the book, and before I even said a word, a little boy sitting right in front said, "Well, which one's the girl and which one's the boy?"
Exactly. And wait, though, isn't there also something, a special thing about worms that they, are they hermaphroditic? Sorry, we might be going off topic. I think they are, aren't they?
Oh, no, that's where the whole idea for the book came from.
I definitely remember that they have like 11 hearts, because I remember doing that in fifth grade biology. But we never know, and we never know throughout your book. We never know throughout this book the gender of the worms. We don't need to. Well, they're hermaphrodites, so there, in that way, is no gender defined the way that, that we understand gender. But I see this book in such a lovely way because I see, I have a 5-year-old, right? And Mike, you've sort of watched my 5-year-old grow up. But JJ, I have a 5-year-old and we're at this sweet spot in play now where when he's with me, or more importantly, when he's around a group of friends, I see them trying to dictate rules to games, mm-hmm. especially make-believe games. And I see that happening a lot in your book too, which is definitely mimicked by adults in especially in the case of marriage and in other topics. But to have these worms say, well, now can we be married? And other animals hopping and saying, wait, well, you need this. You need to have, who's going to be the bride and who's going to, bake the cake and who's going to do this? So I feel like not only is this a book about marriage, but it also is about sort of about kids playing marriage at the same time. And because I think when we play, we also help, it helps us understand the world, right? And understand things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's fun. I like it. It makes me want to just have kids act out this play. I feel like Reader's Theater is killer on this book. But, yeah.
I just saw someone, just as an aside, but I just saw someone post this photo of her daughter or their daughter acting out the book with Play-Doh worms and insects that she was making.
That is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
How about that? When you have books out, well, Mike, you've got a couple out to see this, but JJ, for you seeing it for the first time, to have a book out and to see how kids take your book and play with it and make the story theirs and make telling the story their responsibility.
Yeah, it's been really interesting and fun, and kind of going off what you were talking about, marriage. When I've talked to kids after they've read it or I've read it to them, most of them, the message they seem to get isn't so much about marriage equality, because I don't think that really registers at that age. What they really get is the worms are sticking up for themselves. Yeah. That the worms aren't letting all the other insects tell them what to do. And, I never thought about that when I wrote the book, but when you're a little kid, everyone is telling you what to do. So I think maybe for kids, seeing these worms stand up and saying, no, we're going to change things because we want to do it this way and it's the right thing. I think kids get a lot out of that. And I think they get some joy out of that too.
I think that too, you have them standing up for themselves, not out of anger or out of anything that seems malicious or like attacking the animal's back or defensive. It's just, I mean, here, if I read an excerpt, I'll even just read from the start. Do you mind that I share a little bit? Is that okay?
Oh, no, not at all.
Cool. So it starts, Worm loves Worm. Let's be married, says Worm to Worm. Yes, answers Worm. Let's be married. Wait, says Cricket. You'll need someone to marry you. That's how it's always been done. I'll marry you. Now can we be married? Asks Worm. Wait, says Beetle. You've got to have a best beetle. Naturally, that would be me. Now can we be married? Asks Worm. And it continues, as you're saying, on like that, that there's just this, well, now can we be married? Are we done yet? Have we jumped through the hoops? Is it time?
Yeah.
And also, you know, it's interesting because when I first wrote the story, Cricket, everyone said no instead of wait. And it was pointed out to me when I was workshopping it during graduate school that no was very negative. And I realized it also made the other insects seem sort of mean or a little too bossy, if that makes sense, which I didn't want. I don't think Cricket or Beetle are mean either. They're very enthusiastic, but they're used to doing things a certain way. Mm-hmm. And we all get that way. When we do something our way, obviously to us, it's the right way. And so by just making that smaller change to wait, it changed the tone of the whole book.
I would agree with that. Mike, when you got this manuscript, what was that like for you? I mean, are you just as an illustrator, I guess you are open then to, well, I'll write my own books, but of course I'm willing to look at manuscripts and consider illustrating. What was it like then when you got this manuscript across your desk?
Well, I've actually gotten other manuscripts prior to this. But this is the first one that I thought was a good fit for me, that someone else wrote. So well done, JJ.
You're in the club now, the Curato Club.
No,
the most awesome club.
Of the JJ Club, you know, collaboration club. I thought it was really exciting, and obviously, it's a story that is very relevant to our times. Something that I can relate to. And I just think it's such a feel good book and an easy, entree to talking about marriage in general. Here's a point that I wanted to make. This is why I love this book so much. And why I love that worms are the central characters. I think that people are apprehensive about talking to children about, you know, same-sex couples getting married because they for some reason think that they have to talk about sex in order to do that. And that's just not the case. And this book is a perfect example of, animals, insects, what are worms, creatures, as we were saying before, like they're hermaphroditic, they're asexual. Like that doesn't play a role. They're just two creatures that love each other. And that's the end of the story, you know. You don't need to know anything else. There's so much more about marriage than that aspect. So that's a huge point that I'm in love with the book over. Does that make sense?
I think absolutely that it is about a relationship and a commitment to each other. It's not about, there's nothing sort of taboo about marriage the way that there is about sex. Is that safe to say that way? Well, there's not even anything taboo. Well, maybe we're getting out of it being taboo about sexuality. I actually love being a little scientist. I love this notion of talking to kids about worms being hermaphroditic. I mean,
right.
Come on.
I think just in general, you know, American culture, I think most people talking to kids about sex is kind of taboo, or
it is. It's hard.
Scary. You know, it's,
you don't want them to ask a question that you can't answer, or that would lead the wrong way, or that I think that there's all that. Okay, just to have it out there, I think that that sex for adults can also go hand in hand with power, unfortunately, in some cases. Mm-hmm. And so as a parent protecting a child, you want to sort of be instilling this feeling with children of asserting yourself and being strong and standing up for yourself and being protective of your body. But mm-hmm. That's not marriage. First comes love, then comes marriage, then comes worms in a baby carriage. So that's a third step, parents.
Or just worms from the adoption agency. Yes.
Exactly. Yeah. So to get at it, this is a book. I hope you don't mind that to spoil the ending, because I think that it has a nice wrapped up ending. But just to, I guess, to say, not to spoil the ending, but to say to listeners, if you haven't read this book yet, that this book doesn't end with the worms being frustrated and going home, or the worms like eloping and having to like, you know, banish their friends for their lives. There's a nice ending to this. That is a message of love, and of love conquering all, if you will. And I think that that's a really important message too, because I think even when we play, there's this feeling to me, like I think of playing dress up, and I think of just this winter, how my son wanted to be, how do we call it? Santa Vader. I think we called it Santa Vader. It was some mashup like that. That when we interact with kids, we are constantly giving them messages whether they're verbal or nonverbal, we're constantly giving them messages that this is okay or this is not okay. Mm-hmm. And that is helping them to define their world through that play. And when we say it's not okay because of our own insecurities or because of some control thing, like if I told my kid, no, there's no such thing as Vader claws, that Santa Vader, whatever, that doesn't work. Then I'm sort of not giving him permission to have that view. Right. And so if we go even down that path of like, when my son, is over at his cousin's house and all she has is, Disney princess dress up stuff. Mm-hmm. It's not a problem for you to put on a dress and to play that game. There's nothing wrong with that. And to be in a situation in this case where, because you're experimenting and you're understanding what things are like and you're playing different roles. But to be in the safety of this book and the safety of your words, JJ, and the safety of your illustrations, Mike, that shows that we can just have fun and be loved and be loved by our friends, but also in this case, be really in love. And it's okay. All of these things are safe and okay.
Yeah, and one thing, since you were talking about the ending, that I just wanted to point out is that even the characters that were a little apprehensive to begin with about their worm friends getting married and not going about things in the conventional manner, in the end, everyone is happy. You know, even the people that were worried because nothing like this had been done before. You know, I mean, I don't want to give anything away. I mean,
oh, you're not giving anything away.
It ends happily ever after, obviously.
Well, and that's a huge part because of you, Mike, because I, you know, it's a wonderful thing, you know, this being my first book, I had no idea what the illustrations were going to be like, but in my head, I had it pictured obviously a certain way. And Mike, his pictures were so close to how I imagined it. I'd always imagined it with a white background being very simple, but Mike did a wonderful thing because in the text it never, you know, and this goes out to anyone who wants to write a picture book, you never tell the illustrator what to do. You never describe anything. That's for the illustrator. And that's for me where the magic happens. And Mike did such a wonderful job in the last panel showing the other insects and showing that they were not only happy, but just loving of the worms and the worms' marriage. And it's just a wonderful message for everyone to accept new things. Because, you know, change is scary, but it's also a lot of times a good thing. And Mike just did a fantastic job with that.
I like at the end all the reactions. Mike, first off, I like that you've sort of color blocked all of the different animals. They look, or all right, different insects. They look nice on the page that we have blue and yellow and red and brown. And it just looks nice on the page. I especially like the color of the worms with the tuxedo and the bride's gowns, because I think the black and white looks nice on there. But I like at the end that you sort of have in your text, John, and in the frame in that beautiful way that they are posed to make this heart out of their bodies. I love that it just says, and so they were married because worm loves worm. And it just sort of ends with a, because this is this way, because it is, because it's a fact that we love people because we do. And I like that there are friends hugging and crying and just cheering. And I just feel like there's so many emotions packed into these little bugs. It's adorable.
And the roses in the air, the petals.
JJ, so you had this experience, because this is something that, as an author, you never get anything to do with at all, I don't think. But JJ, after you read that page, right, and then you flip it and you see those end papers, right? Those gorgeous end papers. Oh,
I'm
my
having
word.
Pans made out of those end papers.
Yes. They're beautiful. That, Mike, there's the design in that, and I know you come from a design background, but that payoff, I can't remember a picture book that's done that to me before, where turning the page to see nothing didn't just feel like, oh, it's time for me to close the book. It just felt like, Oh, here's my moment of silence to just take in the book that I just read. It was wonderful. Yay. Yeah. Oh, I like that. JJ, yeah. pants of the month.
Yes.
Wait,
yes.
We need to talk about your pants of the month. Can we take an aside to talk about pants of the month?
Always.
Okay. So, you've got some cool looking pants.
Yeah. On my blog, I have a page called Pants of the Month, and I have a little explanation. I've gotten to be known for wearing very wild and loud pants.
Where do you find wild? Give me an example. I mean, I have seen them, but for people listening, describe what you mean by wild and crazy pants. Are
well,
you talking
actually,
about like
right now the big controversy with the Super Bowl, which is going to be while we're recording this, this is going to happen this weekend. Cam Newton, the quarterback for the Panthers, wore a pair of Versace pants that everyone went crazy for. And I looked at him and was like, oh, those are nice. I mean, I got my pants. It started with me. I inherited a bunch of my father's pants from the 70s.
Okay.
That's what the dads where I grew up in Connecticut did on the weekends. They went to cocktail parties and the fathers wore these really loud pants. And I loved that about my dad because he would wear a suit every day, but he still had a way on the weekends of showing that he was fun and didn't take himself too seriously. And so I inherited the pants and I started wearing them. And of course the kids love them and it's fun. And it got to the point where I can't wear khakis to events because then people are truly disappointed.
They're disappointed. Yeah.
And getting back to, it's funny. And now I actually have to put up the new pants of the month. And I picked out a pair of really nice pink paisleys that I have.
Wait, but are you really getting pants made from Mike's pant, from Mike's design?
Those I will. Yeah.
That's amazing.
I want to do that. I've got to clear that with Mike, I think. I don't know how that copyright
works. Oh, well, I've just been waiting.
Here's the only context the only context I have about how you get fabric made is that on Project Runway, I've seen that you can draw designs and they will make fabric. I know that that exists.
Yeah,
but
Paul Zielinski, he does that.
Paul does that. I was just going to say, that was the other thing that I know that he designs it, but to have that tie-in is just, that's amazing.
Yeah.
That's amazing. There's a thing. This can be a thing.
It's gonna be a thing.
Team up with Paul. It totally. If it's not a thing already, you just need to market it. It's a thing.
Yeah. I remember,
okay. Sorry.
I
go ahead.
No. It's okay. I think I saw Paul talk, and he had the shirt, and I found out what company he uses to get the material made. So.
Oh, okay. There you go.
It's Spoonflower, I believe. So.
Right. Yeah. That's it.
So you have done one school visit. So one. I mean, you've done like book festivals, or you will continue to do over the summer. But what I can't wait for then, JJ, is if somehow, somewhere in the way that you're building friends in the children's literature community and you're visiting these schools or whatever, I know that Mike got gifted a ton of cupcakes because of little Elliot, but I hope that some rare, amazing visit, you're going to be gifted some amazing pants.
Oh, I hope so, and I hope they fit. That would be wonderful.
So on your, in your, that's right, in your,
I thought you were going to say like gummy worms, but.
Yeah.
Oh, well, there you go. In your,
actually,
in your,
that's what we handed
gummy
out
worms
to the kids at the visit, gummy worms. We got permission from the teachers.
That's cute. in your book, or in a contract that you sign when you go to school visits, just, you know, somewhere at the bottom, maybe in your signature, write your name and that you're an author, and then leave your pants measurements. Oh, gummy worms. That's a good idea. I don't know why that didn't jump into my head. Maybe because I didn't. The idea of eating the main characters after you read them felt a little off. But it is cute to have gummy worms that you can hold and bend into like heart shapes and things like that and then have them kiss each other. Because
right.
I think even still, now that I'm an adult but still playing with five-year-olds, I still love having animals and objects kiss each other and play like that together. Aye, aye. What fun. Hey, Mike, can I bring up with you, can I ask you about your author bio on your jacket?
Sure, yeah.
Because I didn't look at my copies of Little Elliot
to
compare.
Okay.
But in your author bio, you mentioned Dan, you mentioned your husband, being married in a very, very wormy wedding.
Right.
Is this the first time that you've mentioned Dan in your bio?
Yeah, I guess so.
I mean, it's relevant, right?
Yeah.
But the reason why I bring it up is because I haven't While I know that I know authors and illustrators who are gay, I have not seen it in an author bio yet, which is one of the first times that kids and parents get to meet you, which I think is, this is all obviously a great context in the context of Worm Loves Worm to also be sharing that.
Yeah, and, I'm glad you brought that up, actually, because since we were talking about taboos earlier, you know, I feel like there is this stigma also of gay people around children and this kind of mistrust. You're a gay man and you don't have children. Like, why do you want to be around children? And so I promised myself that I wouldn't, you know, be in the closet at all. Obviously, it would be silly for me to be in the closet and make this book. But yeah. Generally, as a rule, I was in the closet long enough in my life. Like, I don't need to go back in there for anyone. It feels really liberating to have Dan be a part of my bio. I mean, he is very much a part of my life.
Yeah.
and there are many authors who, you know, will say so-and-so is married with children or, you know.
Of course.
And lives in wherever.
Like JJ did? Yeah. JJ totally did that.
And, you know, and Dan is very much a part of my process in a way because every illustration has to be Dan approved before it goes out the door. I show him everything and there's like a certain face that I know that if he makes the face, then I'm good. But if it doesn't immediately elicit that face, I'm like, all right.
Well, yeah, something's off.
I guess I have to work on this more, but.
Well, I think that's great. And I think about, so my only tie, and this is not a good tie at all, but when I started in the classroom, which is something like 12 years ago, my team leader mentioned that in the room that I was placed in, which was in a pod, which is sort of like a bunch of classrooms all connected with one central area, they didn't want to put me in the back room. Not that they had any concern about me at all, but because some parents might be concerned if a man was alone with their children somewhere that wasn't like easily seen. So when you brought that up, it's that exact same thing where I feel like men in education, there's this weird thing in men in elementary school, which is that I'm very aware that we're like a high need kind of thing, which is great. Mm-hmm. You want me to be a model or whatever for your children. This is wonderful. But at the same time, there must have been some men in history that have done really bad things to make it so that all men apparently can't be trusted in the classroom to some degree. I don't feel that way at all anymore, but I just haven't forgotten my first year of teaching that was said to me and how it just made me feel, I guess it made me feel like, God, does everybody feel that way? Do people trust me with their child? So I imagine what that could be like to an even greater degree for you. But I also think then with a book like this, that for some children, Mike, and I don't mean to put pressure on you, but for some children, this book and then meeting you and then asking, well, are you gay or you have a husband or whatever, but based on reading that, could be their first experience with meeting someone who is gay. And I think that is really, really powerful, that there's this fantastic picture book that they're reading and you're a phenomenal guy who've got so many great books about. See, this book is perfect for you because Elliot is perfect for you too, because it's like about being taking care of our souls and our families and, and knowing that we're all a little bit fragile, but we're also a little bit resilient. And I just feel like JJ, I want to say nice things about you too. I am trying to say nice things about both of you. I'm trying to balance people.
We'll get there.
But I just feel like to know that people like you and the other guests I've had on the podcast too, you continue to impress me with the kind of people that you are, knowing that you're going in front of our children and helping them to have experiences that they might not live in their own life. So they're living it through a book. That means a great deal to me.
Hmm. Oh, thanks, Matthew.
Thank you both for making this book. Group hug. Nice. You're welcome. Well,
I can say now that I've gotten to just be exposed to the, the kid lit community. It's just a wonderful community. It's been one of the most fun things about it. It's just how wonderful everyone is. It seems everyone I've dealt with so far, knock on wood, really is in it for the right reasons. They're in it because they love kids. Yeah. They love stories and they want to make the world a better place for kids and help them. Because, being a kid's hard. I think a lot of people forget that. And if there's anything we can do just to help even a little bit, I think it's a wonderful thing. And I just feel blessed to be part of it and to have been paired with, Mike. He just is so amazing, so talented. And you're right, such a wonderful person.
So,
oh gosh.
JJ, why? Look, he is, right? Mike, you're totally a wonderful person. Deal with it.
Blog, so this is my chance to get back at
JJ, why, if I can be so frank, why write a book about marriage equality? For really, I feel like the target audience is like ages 3 to 6. Why marriage equality for someone so young?
Well, first I would say that people say what the age range on the book is. And I say, between 3 and 6, 4 and 8. And for the adults who've kind of forgotten that love's unconditional.
Oh, yeah. And I've read your book. I read book when I get books and I have the authors coming in and all that. I do my best to read it to all of my classes so that I get a good sense of how are we all feeling about this. And it's neat to see different ages. So I don't mean to pigeonhole your book to a certain age, but
I'm joking.
I just mean that I think the sweet spot is younger, and then that makes it even more important that, like with my son, I'm reading it, so we're sharing this experience together. But again, the drive to even write it in the first place.
Well, that was because of my son. He wasn't quite 5, which is interesting. And so this would have been, he's 12 now, so this was 7 years ago. And we were living back in the Hudson Valley, New York, and we had a pair of wonderful, wonderful neighbors who we're still very close to, Pam and Lenore, who are aunts to my children. And one night I was tucking Joe in and he looked at me and said, "Oh, Pam and Lenore are married like you and mommy." And I had to be honest with him. I always try and be as honest as I can. And I said, "No, unfortunately, women can't marry women in New York." And being 5, he looked at me and said, "Why not?" And I didn't want to say, well, some people don't think it's right, because kids at that age have a real strong sense of what right and wrong is.
Absolutely.
And so I kind of fumbled and I said, well, some people just don't think it's natural. And Joe looked at me and said, "That's dumb. They love each other."
Way to go, Joe.
Yeah, Joe's off.
He's a smart kid.
Why do we get so dumb when we become adults?
That's what I don't know. And so that's what I was thinking. And I'm thinking about this stupid argument that it's not natural. And I thought of earthworms. They are hermaphrodites. Nature does not care about your gender. Why should we? And so that was in the back of my mind. And then we moved here to Minneapolis to be closer to my wife's family. And I found out that Hamline University has a wonderful MFA program for creative writing for young adults and children. And I went, but focusing on young adult. And luckily, one of my advisors was Claire Rudolph Murphy, who does a lot of nonfiction. She challenged me to write a picture book. Actually, she didn't challenge me. She made me. She said I had to write a picture book. Because I literally said, "No, those are hard, lady. What, 32 pages, under 500 words? I don't want anything to do with that. That's real work." And she said I had to write it. And this idea came back to me. And so that's how I came about writing Worm Loves Worm.
Again, be so forward to ask, was it a manuscript that was easy to sell? Or I don't know if you
It was the easiest thing ever. I didn't even sell it. And everyone out there is going to hate me, but that's the truth.
That's awesome. That is awesome. I guess I ask because I ask hesitantly because I don't know where publishing is in that way. But I do know, I've talked to a lot of friends about that need for diverse books. I understand that, but I also feel like it takes a person who has experience with the topic to be able to write a good book about the topic. And this goes to not just marriage equality, but also like learning disabilities and physical disabilities and broken families and things like that, that it's, I can't just imagine what it's like knowing someone or experiencing it myself is really what we need. And so to know that you had these amazing family friends or continue to have these amazing family friends and then got to be in this situation where you had the opportunity to write, it really warms my heart to know that publishing was ready too.
Oh no, it was a wonderful experience. I wrote it and I workshopped it at Hamlin. I then got to work with Nancy Carlson on it. And then I was at Highlights has a retreat for young adult science fiction and fantasy. It was run by Anne Ursu and Laura Ruby.
Oh, cool.
Who had been my advisors at Hamlin.
Oh!
Yeah. That's why I knew about the program. That's the reason I probably got in. And one night they said, well, read something different than your science fiction or fantasy. And so luckily, Miriam Bush, who wrote Lion Lion, who I know through Hamlin, was also there. And she said, read your picture book. I really love that story, JJ. And I just thought, well, yeah, that's short because I can just read this and be done.
Only have to stand up like 3 minutes. This is totally easy.
Exactly. I don't have to read a whole chapter. And so I read it and it was nice. But, you know, I'm not there for picture books. I'm not thinking about that, you know. And about a month later, Anne Ursu sends me an email saying, I sort of pitched your picture book to an editor without asking you. I hope you don't mind. You know, wow. And of course, I'm like, why would you? What? I thought, Anne Ursu's punking me. What's going on? This doesn't happen this way. And the next thing I know, Alessandra Balzer is calling me saying she wants to acquire my book.
That's awesome. Wow. Yeah. Congratulations on that. That's cool.
I also have to just let everyone know I'm a 30-year overnight success. You know, I've been writing and trying to sell things since I got out of college. And so don't come at me with your pitchforks. Just.
But to know that the right book, when you have the right book, when you have the right manuscript, it reaches people and that things can move fast when it's just right. But that, you know, sometimes manuscripts just aren't quite right. The timing's not right. The words aren't quite right or something. That's great that this was just right.
Yeah. And then even better, we got the perfect illustrator. And that's what Alessandra said. She said, there's this great new illustrator. His first book isn't out yet, but we just love.
Oh, it was that far in advance. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Little Elliot was just about to come out. Am I right, Mike? Before.
Everything is so hazy. I have to like look back in emails and
I know Little Elliot wasn't out because Alessandra sent me a link to your website and asked me to look at your art, and if it was okay with me, they'd like to approach your agent. And I remember I looked at your artwork and I was like, oh, I literally was like, please God, let him say yes. So beautiful. And I was just like, yeah, if this guy wants to work with me, Alessandra, please. So,
well, it's really interesting because, you know, you were saying before that, you know, you didn't get to look at the art and it magically came out how you envisioned it. And I talked with Alessandra before I signed the contract to make sure that we were all on the same page because I kind of, this was a bit of a departure for me. Like my Elliot work is very detailed and it's usually a full bleed and lots of bells and whistles. And I wanted this to be really simple because it's such a simple concept of a book. And so, yeah, that's exactly how I envisioned it, was the kind of sparse, not kind of, completely sparse environment and just really character driven and keeping it all simple. So I feel like the book already existed, I don't know, you know, in some, what do you even call it? Like some creative ether and nice. I don't know, just
like Plato's, like, what is it? Plato's perfect form. It was there.
Yes, it just was. And then it just found its way through us.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's getting pretty deep, but
It's awesome. I like it. I dig it all.
Yeah, we lucked out.
I think it's amazing. I think, yes, I think this is one of those picture book magic things where these two completely different people somehow don't, you know, like, meaning like you don't know each other. You're not like in each other's worlds, but then you come together and this thing comes out. That's just, it's awesome. It's just meant to be. It's wonderful. And I think this always sort of points back to that. There are people in publishing that really can picture with these words, the right art, and can, there's a faith that can be had for the system and for why it works. That's great. I mean, so I need to tell a Mike story. JJ, here's my Mike story. Ready? Mike, I'm going to tell a Mike story. And I think I actually knew about Worm Loves Worm this long too, because I think I heard about it way back at this time. JJ, here's how I met Mike. I met Mike because I made a friend named Lori Nichols, who writes these great picture books called Maple. Wonderful picture. She's done other stuff, but Maple is just amazing. Anyway, Lori was like, oh, you're going up to New York. You need to meet my friend Mike, because I was going up to Books of Wonder to moderate a panel. And Mike and I got in touch over email, and Mike, you had like an early arc or something. It was just early right, FNG. Yeah. And you were like, can I bring it to you? And I, yeah, sure, bring it to me. Thinking like, I don't know what this is, but it's fun to get books. your book, Mike, I remember first laying eyes on Little Elliot going like, oh my God, this guy, who is this guy that wants to talk to me that this book is gorgeous and like I'm being handed this now? You caught me off guard in the best way. And that's sort of been, in my mind, the Mike Curato story over and over, is just that you have such a wonderful gift, Mike, and you continue to give and give of your heart and of your personality and of your art in your books, and it works really, really well, and it connects with people, and people feel something. And so, JJ, now to have you working with Mike too is so beautiful, to have your words, because your voice is different from Mike. So to have your words and Mike's art working together that way to tell a new story, it's really beautiful. Because I know we're reaching the end of our time, but I want to just emphasize one more time how much I love your book and how important I think it is, and how thankful I am that it does exist, that you breathed life to it out of the ether or whatever we're saying, but that it's there now because it's so important. And I know that through your school visits and through author Skypes, but also just from a kid randomly picking it up at a library because it's facing out somewhere, I know that is changing lives and broadening the world for children, and that I can't thank you enough for.
Thank you, Matthew.
There's nothing for you to thank me for. That was just the moment for you to let that be part of the ether. Okay, let me turn back about writing, and then we'll wrap this up. JJ, before we go, do you have anything else in the works that you want to share? What's coming down the line?
Well, right now I'm working on a young adult book, a fantasy, and it deals a lot with, in some ways it deals with the same things Worm Loves Worm does, in the sense that it's a very fun book, but there are things underneath it about the soul, and not everything is what it appears to be.
And how's the writing going? It's hard work to write to stay with a concept that long through all the changes, but you're having fun with it?
I'm having a blast with it. It's That's the cool. most fun I've ever had. I love the characters. It's a fun story. It's a concept I came up with when I was in high school. And I've been building this world in my head and in notebooks. And thanks to the Hamlin program, I finally figured out how to enter the world.
Yeah.
And I got to work with Anna Arsu, Laura Ruby, and some other amazing people on it. So now I'm just, you know, trying to get it revised and ready for the world.
Well, and I know I've heard from being part of the children's literature community, from being part of SCBWI and things like that, from talking to people like you, that it's often those ideas that won't let you go mm-hmm. that end up being something that's worth pursuing. So I'm glad you're pursuing that. And Mike, I know you've got other things in the works. I'm aware of Little Elliot, a third adventure coming, but you want to talk more about that and what else?
Sure. Yeah. Little Elliot Big Fun is coming out August 30th. Elliot and Mouse go to Coney Island, or, you know, Coney Island inspired beach for the day. And meanwhile, I am working on a another book that someone else wrote. Margarita Engel wrote it. It's called Cara Cara, and it takes place in Cuba. And I actually went there in September to do research. So it's been an amazing experience so far. So I'm in it right now, like making final art. And then it's on to the next Little Elliot book, which is due later this year. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah. Yeah. Congratulations on all that. That's great.
And then at some point in time, I'm also creating a YA graphic novel.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was hoping you'd bring it back up.
Yeah.
I know that I'm not first in line because Samantha Berger is probably elbowing me out, but I am so excited that you are doing this.
I'll knock you both over and get in front of you. Why is this the first time hearing this? That sounds awesome.
Okay, thanks. Tell more. Yeah. Tell what you can, but I would love for you to tell more.
Well, it's called Flamer, and it is also an LGBT-focused book. All a bit heavier than Worm Loves Worm, I'd say. You know, a lot of teen angst kind of stuff. I guess that's all I'll say for now. I enjoy your enthusiasm. If either of you are interested in actually illustrating it, you know, ghost illustrating it for me.
I can totally do that.
I don't know when I'm going to get this done, but...
I work in Crayola and Bic Pen. I hope you like what I make.
I love it. Experimentally.
Oh, that's great, though. It's nice to know that you both are working on such diverse stuff and that we'll have more stuff for our readers. That's exciting. Mike, I've asked you this question 3 times. JJ, this will be the first time I ask you, but it always is so wonderful and telling to share this. So to wrap up, I'm assembling an all-star Kidlit Dream Team kickball tournament, and I would love to know what one person alive or past from the Kidlit world you would want on your team and why. JJ, why don't we start with you?
This is so hard because I know a lot of people, but I would have to go with Laura Ruby.
Great choice. Laura Ruby. Now, are you choosing for friendship, for company, for kickball prowess?
To win. Yeah. Laura doesn't mess around. She's also really fun. She's incredibly talented, and she's a wonderful person. And yeah, it'd be fun just to hang out on the bench with her. And I can, you know, or I could substitute her with a number of other people who taught me at Hamlin. But yeah. I was just with Laura this weekend at a writing conference, and she is just awesome. And she'd have no problem pegging you with the ball right between the eyes if you tried to steal second.
Oh, that's amazing. Hey, Mike, time 3. How about you?
Oh my gosh, my team is strong, man.
Yeah, Team Curado. I'm telling you, Team Curado. You've already got JJ and you've got me.
First up, I had Arnold LaBelle.
Yeah. Right?
Next up, I had Samantha Berger. I mean, can you imagine just those two alone?
Those two.
Mine's kind of exploding just thinking about it. But anyway, so today I have Tibor Gurgley, who was an illustrator back in the day. You may know him from such golden books as The Little Red Caboose, but he illustrated so many books for Golden. I can't even, who knows how many. But he's been a huge influence on me. And, you know, I grew up reading a lot of Golden books, and especially a compilation of works illustrated by him that I still have.
Wow.
It's like my little Kidlit Bible in a way. It's very sacred to me. And his work is super inspiring. And I've been really wanting him on my kickball team. I felt so guilty picking Arnold, but I had to go with Arnold the first time.
Well, you keep good company. I like it. Thank you both for coming on, and thank you for Worm Loves Worm. I can't wait to hear more stories from you of how it's connecting with readers of all ages.
Thanks, Matthew.
Thank you, Matthew.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton and The Best Book Ever This Week. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. Next up on Let's Get Busy, Fred Kohler talks about Super Jumbo, a story about being a kid and trying to be a hero. And later in the week, Aaron Reynolds and Sarah Varin share the story behind President Squid, an amazing picture book for reading aloud from Chronicle Books. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtimes a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.